it's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Hey, good morning, and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Beautiful day here, and we just enjoying the hot, muggy weather, and but I'd still be rather be here than to be back there and sweating it out there. So I love this place. And for some while now, we know that we had a discussion and a recent issue in the newspaper, and I held off talking about it. I didn't mention much of it. It's Floating Prisons was the title of the article published in the Star Advertiser. And this relates to the commercial fishing industry. And it was a description, and that some say was unfair, some say was inaccurate. But so give you a little background of my interest and involvement in this. Back in 1998, 99, 2000, 2002, I actually was interested in the industry as it relates to how it was, you know, using the people and where the people were coming from, and all of that, because it was many issues that were, it was the concerns that I had that the National Marine Fisheries Service under the Western Pacific Fisheries Council was getting money, and we wanted to know where that money was going and if they were hiring Native Hawaiians on the boats and what have you. So we were just looking for some background and to be able to understand this growing industry, because remember back in at certain times there weren't that many boats here, if those of you remember this. So I spent many long hours, long days looking at this, and from the human concern, from the environmental concern standpoint, and from the political standpoint, in that, and we're, my guess is Michael Osterdorf, and we'll be hearing from some other fishermen in the studio with me. But what I'm really interested in is that how the AP article that was recently put out, the Floating Prisons, they actually, the writer, the author, the reporter actually called me and talked to me extensively. And I got the sensation that, went away with the sensation that she wasn't really interested in, this is my opinion now, based on what I had conversation with her and based on the information that I shared with her. You can tell when someone is committed to a certain outcome. It doesn't matter what you say, what you do. And the gist of the conversation with Mendoza, I think it was that there's this slavery and fishing boats here, and the industry was a slave industry and what have you. And I offered a number of bits and pieces that would have, what simply would have conveyed a different message, and I tried to tell her that it was more political than anything. The fishermen are responding to whatever they are allowed to do illegally, and I pointed out that customs is aware and has been aware of a long time. Our legislators are aware, and what's unsettling about this article, and I'm speaking from a concern of you being the public, the reader, that you're not giving the fairness in delivery of information. It was contained, controlled, and fed to you in a certain fashion. And we'll point out some of those things. But in my situation, offering her that, look, Daniel Inouye knew about it, but if you read the article, it suggests that legislators knew about it but didn't bother to name those legislators because they're, no quote, no longer around. So we're going to get into the greater details of this. If you ask me, and you know I bitch about everything, I mean, if it's about racism, it's about inequalities, if it's about gay rights, I'm standing in the front line waiting to take whatever necessary to make sure people get their rights. But when something like this, this is my description now. If you get angry at it, it's tough. This is a situation. Based on my background, my information that I've gathered over the years, this was an inaccurate and still is an inaccurate description of this industry. And I'm not, you know, I've bitten into their butts many a times, and I think I can be considered one of those people that led the fight against many of the issues in the long line. But when you write an article and you tag this industry with something that is, in my opinion, an inaccurate, and basically I don't think the real facts are there, just basically I would say almost a drive-by. You had a little interaction with the people on the boats, and then you went back and pitched it as is being the total situation and in totality. We're going to get into a great bit of this for the next 2 hours, and later on, if you'd like to call in, 524-1080. But I personally, based on the information and the number of years that I have invested in this matter, it's nowhere near slavery. And I just want to set the tone here, and so you'll understand, and we'll get to my guest here. And then, by the way, if any of you think that I'm being paid or whatever, then you're a sick puppy. You're disrespectful. I don't have to be paid to tell the truth. Not all local. This is the article. Not all local. Not so local. At Honolulu Pier 38, this is the article. The tired fisherman dock at the end of another trip. A tired fisherman dock at another trip. Some venture as far as 50 feet to a nearby public restroom, but they are careful not to stray much farther. They know they can be sent home if caught off their ships. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, those that care and those that don't care, if the person you're describing this industry is slavery, then, and it's the condition is so bad that they contacted you and complained, and it's an evil empire that they're living in, why wouldn't that person, knowing, this is your own words, why wouldn't he take 55 yards and knowing that he could be freed from slavery in an instant? So, having said that, and I'm not defending the fishing industry, and like I say, there are no apologies here. I'm just going to give you the history and my knowledge and background and my observations on. It's a shameful practice in today's media when we label something, be so careless and to get a thrill. And then you wouldn't dare in this article name the legislators, name what's broken, be specific. Hopefully you did this article to make things better for the people aboard those vessels. So anyway, Michael Ossendorp, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Carol. Good morning to everybody. Well, Carol, you just mentioned, why wouldn't a person go an extra 5 feet?
Knowing he could be freed of slavery like that.
Yeah. The thing is, didn't Martha Mendoza, the author of the article, didn't she interview you days before the article was published?
She did, yes.
And you, it's my understanding you told her it is not so.
Yeah, I was very emphatic and said that I had not viewed anything from the slave and wasn't up to par on that because things have changed. In the fashion that there are contracts, customs knows about it, customs checked about it, and also one of the bigger things is the Department of Land and Natural Resources knows about it, and we'll talk about that in greater details. But I gave her extensive information as to the legislators involved, but the way the article was written, it's like, oh, they're going to don their capes now and rush to the scene of the crime But while all along Mazie Hirono has been in office, she knows about it. Schatz was in office as a state legislator state representative. So he knew. You understand?
Right. But what I find interesting is they didn't quote you, not one bit.
Well, you know, that's their their prerogative, but it does strike me as interesting. Not a single quote to strike a balance in that article to say that Carol Cox see it differently and based on this, and this, right?
Yeah, they just wanted to see your face next to the slavery issue, I suppose. You wanted to have a photo op.
But if I'd have said, of course it's slavery, you know that it is, and of course, and I blah, 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 I would have been probably...
You would have been on the front page.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of the Indonesian that they show with the two customs officers. And by the way, that Indonesian, I asked the owner to give me the canceled checks or a copy of the canceled checks.
Mm-hmm.
This guy was making between $2,000 to $3,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to customs and said, "Look, I got the canceled checks to show that this guy was being paid well," and they said, "We're not interested in it because we know." I said, "What do you mean you know?" He said, "Because it was a small vessel with only two Indonesians on it. We always checked on them. We always made sure that they were doing good." He said the work was hard, but they didn't care because they were being paid so much. Way beyond God's wages in Indonesia. $2,000 to $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
3 days before the sinking of that vessel, that guy got paid $2,300.
Yeah, and so that the listeners will know, I have a copy of that check as well, that communication, and a copy of the communication from the skipper or the owner of the boat. So it's that kind of journalism that seems to only, well, maybe, I don't know, was it available to her? I don't know.
It was available to her, but, you know, she has a book to promote. Her book came out where she talks about these issues in other countries like Indonesia, and I guess she just needed publicity.
But
there was two deckhands. There were two guys on that small vessel. The second guy keeps asking the skipper, "When are you going to go and buy another vessel so I can come back and work for you?"
Mm-hmm.
This particular guy didn't even know how to swim. I mean, just think about this. This guy is a fisherman. When the vessel was sinking and everybody was on the other boat safe, he wouldn't leave the vessel. So the captain had to swim back, subdue the guy, and bring him back to the other boat because he refused to leave the vessel. So now the word was, "Don't send him anywhere." And I guess that's his retribution. If a fisherman can't swim...
Mm-hmm. Well, to go further, and anybody that has questions thinking you're making this up, the United States Coast Guard welcomed the captain of the vessel and owner of the vessel, where they went and gave an appreciation and gave a lay to the Coast Guard members of rescuers at Barbara's Point. I went there and filmed it for TV. And in turn, that same story was told that he couldn't, and the person that swam back to get him told that story. And so would you risk your life for a slave that's when the boat's sinking? If you were living in a slave condition, sounds like the way the article is, human life is expendable, it's cheap. So why would you have an act such as that?
Well, the article starts even out with foreign fishermen confined. They're not confined. They're not confined one bit in that sense. They visit each other on the pier. They go from boat to boat. You know, for instance, at Pier 38, 36, 37, we have Filipino crew, for instance. The majority is Filipino crew. They got relatives here. They all have relatives here.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? The relatives come down to the boats. They barbecue. They visit each other. They have a party. They play basketball. I mean, it's...
And we have a caller, and I don't want to hold them on. Maybe it's one of the other fishermen, but we'll talk more about this. Hold that thought about... because you and I actually met while I was down there walking the piers looking for people that were coming in and from Indonesia and different places. We didn't know one another then, but that's how we struck up conversation. And then you
that's
made
right.
available all the boats, and you would introduce me to the fishermen and to see for myself.
And the crew,
and
especially
the crew. Because there were some instances, you know, I found that some of the crew was actually running two families. A family here, I mean, it's laughable because slaves don't have this liberty. As if you read that article, I documented where several people were actually men here working on the boats, and at nighttime they would leave and go hang out with their second family here, you know, keeping house.
But that was in the old days.
But I'm saying it was in the old days. But you know, but again, see, for years they're confined in slavery, and then they also the people go and shop, and the doctors come. And you introduced me to a situation where the person had tuberculosis. And maybe that's one of those she was talking about. I even interviewed the doctor. The doctor was on the show here talking about that particular instance. So, you know, to say that this industry is a slave-minded, the mindset of the environment is slavery, I think it's only fair why I should speak up. And not defending you, because you know how I am. The truth is the truth, and I don't give a damn about the relationships. But at some point, you have to turn around and say, let's tell the truth. Yes, do they have problems? Is it a perfect industry? No. Nothing's perfect. Not in America. There's always, that's why nature isn't even stable. But let's get this caller. Caller, thank you for waiting, and thank you for calling. You comments or anything? Hello?
Hello, yes. Hi, this is Ken Bass.
Okay, hi, Ken.
I'm calling because I'm calling you from Raleigh, North Carolina, but you're wondering how I'm listening in, but my fiance is the daughter of one of the fishermen who was mentioned in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I've met him. He's my future father-in-law. I've visited with him, and he has two boats. And he has now actually been sued in federal court in San Francisco
mm-hmm.
by two former Indonesian workers on his boat who were mentioned in the story and who have sued under a human trafficking law.
Mm-hmm.
And accused him of being a human trafficker, and I have to say it's quite tragic for I'll just call him my father-in-law because
mm-hmm.
I feel he's that way and not future father-in-law, but it's quite tragic for him. He's a small businessman, and he's out there doing his best to make a living. He employs about 12 people on the two boats, many of them. Some of them are foreign nationals, and quite a few of them are U.S. nationals. And he's supplying food to the, seafood business in the U.S. And his business is, as you've mentioned, is highly regulated, not just from a immigration standpoint and a customs standpoint, but there are also regulations on what types of fish he can catch and when he can catch them and how long his long line can be. And every trip that he takes out when he's sword fishing, he has an observer on board who's a government person,
mm-hmm.
not part of his crew. He's just there to make sure that he's observing that. And it's inconceivable that you could have government observers on boats where there's slavery going on. There's all kinds of people who know exactly what's going on, and it's clear that they have people coming on the boats who are given an opportunity to work for a couple years to support their families. The two in this lawsuit are from Indonesia, and every time they came back into port, my mother-in-law would take a good chunk of their paycheck down to Western Union and wire it back to their families in Indonesia.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the records of that. So it's very misleading and misrepresentative. Now, on the other hand, nobody would say that it's a, that it's the most wonderful life on earth. It's hard work to be on a fishing boat. And there's an aspect of the immigration and customs regulations that makes things worse than it should be that I think most of the fishermen would support changing, which is they're literally and technically not allowed the foreign nationals on the boats to set foot on U.S. soil because they don't have a visa. Mm-hmm. They don't have any kind of legal status. And so they fall into this kind of a limbo where customs will let them go the 50 feet to the bathroom and go between the boats in Hawaii. They're stricter in San Francisco when they're there. But it means that they are stuck on the, kind of, in a way, stuck on the boats for the term of their contract, which is typically a couple years. And mm-hmm. that's not the best thing in the world for morale. And that's what people are confusing that and saying that they don't mention that when they say, oh, they're confined to the boats and they're slaves. Well, that's what the U.S. law, that as you mentioned, the various legislators who are perfectly aware of this.
Yeah.
That's what the law requires.
Well, we used to have C-1, D-1 visas for the crew before 9/11, but that changed it all.
Well, I want to toss something in here, and I guess once the name calling starts, it's like the snowball. The person that's being targeted with that name calling got to roll that snowball back uphill. But where do you start? Well, let me just say, for example, there's a recent Kanala Ing. He's a state representative, and there's a bill he's talking about introducing, and some are now claiming that this new legislation that they should consider is that the DLNR should be told who's aboard these vessels. Well, first of all, this is my knowledge, and you correct me. I know that for a fact that the fishermen fishing on those vessels, the fishermen, the deckhands, not the owner, but the owner too, needs a fishing license when they're fishing in state waters. So at one time, the owners of the fishing vessels had to make a list and take the list down to DLNR and obtain a license for $200 each and declare who these people are, produce their passport. And now all of a sudden, there was a lawsuit to say, $50 because there was an objection that you shouldn't be discriminating and charging $200. But my point is, the Department of Land and Natural Resources knew and has known all along and has been benefiting and profiting from that by charging excessive fees of $200 of each fisherman. Now all of a sudden the article is written, oh, our legislators and lawmakers are going to think about doing something. Come on, we can't tolerate that kind of lame behavior in media or in journalism or in government.
No, the Department of Land and Natural Resources knows exactly who's on the boats. Everybody on a boat, and it's not fishing in state waters. Actually, these vessels, none of them is ever in state waters because they have an artificial fence. They have to be way outside. What it is everybody has to have a fishing license, and they got a color copy of the passport of every single crew member, because the requirement is if you're landing fish in Hawaii, need to have a fishing license.
Mm-hmm.
So they're aware of every single person. And they have gone to boats and actually checked fishing license. And they have issued tickets to foreign crew members whose license had expired. And then the owner had to take care of it.
So how can it be, the article focuses on the fishermen and the fishing industry, but yet does not detail and acknowledge that there are other people, if this is a crime and as heinous as it is, then why aren't we seeing this article give liberty an equal coverage?
Because they just like to misquote to the point. It's just dishonest media. I mean, it's just, it's so distorted to the point of dishonesty. For instance, it's the same here with Ken, I don't know if he's still on the phone, but...
I'm still on.
Okay. It says Sea Queen 2 that is... First of all, I'm just looking at the picture. It shows the Sea Queen 2A, and I happen to know Twy. And I consider Twy to be a friend of mine because that's how nice he is.
Mm-hmm.
He's a nice guy. If you're 1,000 miles out there and you're stranded, he will come from California and tow you. It's a 2,000-mile round trip for him. The picture shows the Sea Queen 2A. That is not the boat in question.
Mm-hmm.
It was the Sea Queen 2. And then it says it's a Honolulu-based boat, which it is not. It is a San Francisco-based boat, just like the Sea Queen 2A. So there's the first inaccuracy. How dare you take a picture of a vessel that's not involved in any of this
and implicate
that vessel?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, with the two Indonesians, and Ken, please correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I understand it is, well, first of all the Indonesians have phones. Everybody has a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
All the crew, the first thing they obtain is cell phones once they get to Hawaii, because that's how, or San Francisco, that's how they stay in touch with their families.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next thing is, I wasn't there, but the way I understand it is, these two were in touch with someone on the mainland, and they came up with this great idea. How do you get residency? Because they're all detained on board.
Mm-hmm.
They used to have C1, D1 visas, but at one point after 9/11, the State Department put an end to it without legislation. Because C1, D1 foreign crew exists all over the world on American ships. I mean, that's just the nature of the maritime business.
Mm-hmm.
Over here in Honolulu, I don't know what the person's last name is. His first name is Frank. For instance, we had and all the Indonesians know him. This guy can call the Indonesian embassy in L.A. after hours. I know this because of personal knowledge. We had a trip where the Indonesian crew the Kiribati government just took their passports for no reason given.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever reasons were provided after the fact were just baloney. Anyway, these guys had no passports when they got to Honolulu. Frank came down after work hours, talked to the crew, told me that he will take care of it. Mind you not, the embassy is closed.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody from the embassy called me to verify the story. He came back that evening, filled out the paperwork, and within 7 days, they all had replacement passports. So if the crew knows about, and they all know about Frank,
mm-hmm.
that's the Indonesian crew, that is, and he's their contact point. If he can take care of business after hours like that,
mm-hmm.
what's the chance of slavery? So my understanding is these two guys were educated. They noticed that if they talk about slavery, human trafficking, that it's nothing but an elaborate ploy to gain residency in the United States. Now they're residents.
They have the family here.
Why
haven't we seen that here on the shores here? Could they have not done the same thing here?
With the connection as good as Frank is,
yeah.
Every Indonesian would be now a resident in Hawaii. Because they could have done the same thing, but they choose not to.
How many occasions have we seen this in the past?
Not one. And think about it now. The majority of the foreign crew is Filipinos that have family here in town. What did your father-in-law say, Ken?
Well, these two apparently found they had some magazines on board, and apparently after they left, he found that they had circled an ad from an Indonesian immigration attorney. So apparently they'd gotten in touch with him, probably on their phones, talked to him. They probably didn't want to go back to Indonesia, which was always their option. You know, as we talked about earlier, all they would have, if they really felt they were mistreated on board, all they have to do is go talk to the Customs and Border Patrol people at the dock, and those people would investigate, take them off, and send them home. But they didn't want to go back to Indonesia. They wanted to stay in America. And so they got an attorney to, the only way they could do that would be to come under the human rights exception, which is essentially a form of asylum, and ask to stay under that. And so they came up with these, you know, elaborate claims about how they were treated as slaves and mistreated on board as their way, their ticket to the United States. So they went from a job that could help support their families to getting all the way into the United States in this particular instance. And now they've truly learned the United States way, because now they filed a lawsuit against my father-in-law. And the lawsuit has, this lawsuit sounds exactly like the article. It sounds like they were probably working in conjunction, because it has very similar claims in it. And it, it alleges things like that, that, it says that they were not allowed to leave the ship, and that they were, the boat, and that they were forced to work 16 to 20 hours a day. Well, you read it and it sounds like these guys are captive on a boat. They work 16 to 20 hours a day, and they're fed some slop, and they have the life of slaves. Well, everybody who's familiar with the fishing industry knows that, yes, you do have days. It's hard work. You have days on a longline trawler. When the line is out and you're bringing it back in and the fish are on it, you can't just stop and take a break while the, in the middle of that. And so you work hard. You work, sometimes you do work 16 hours, and you're just snacking as you're going. But you're not working like that all the time. As a matter of fact, one of the bigger issues is the boredom when you're not working, when you're going, from Hawaii to San Francisco, or you're going back and you're just sailing for several days and you have no work. And yeah. So, and then when the boat's at the pier, you're not working then either. You're just sitting there. And by the way, the U.S. regulations require that when the boat is at the pier, that a U.S. national must stay on board the boat at all times, to keep an eye on the foreign nationals so that they don't leave the boat and break immigration laws. And that's an expense that the boat, bears, the expense of that. And of course, those people who take the shifts of being on the boat, they'd much rather be at home when they're in shore, with their families than sitting on the boat with these guys. But that's what the law requires. And in this particular instance, when those two Indonesians left the boat, and went ashore and disappeared for 30 days, and customs was looking for them, the owner of the boat, my father-in-law, had to pay a very large fine to customs for having let them leave the boat.
So the watchful eye, customs is there, Coast Guard is there. All of these things are present, and we spoke about the Observer, the federally funded program under the Observer program, right? And right. Each Observer is, to get on that boat, the Observer, how is it they, if you go out and you, can you explain why and how a Observer is aboard, and then that it is sanctioned by the government, it is a function of the federal government. So why then, we should see some screaming and some upset people in federal government to API and to the author of this article and to the other people that are commenting, that you call this slavery and we're at the scene. We see what's going on. We know we are the United States government. We are the federal government, and you say we're conducting slave business.
Right. Well. And calling it human trafficking, and it's like saying that you have people who are human trafficking, and at every step of the way, there's a government regulator who's...
What does that say?
Checking on each of the people who's coming through there. It's like, that's not human trafficking. I mean, it's like, there is legitimate, real human trafficking that occurs in the world, and is worthy of of our outrage and attention and government resources to stop. But this isn't it. I mean, all this does then is detract from real issues and problems.
Mike?
Well, yeah. I mean, Twi goes sword fishing predominantly, and so he always has an observer on board. And the observers always take notes. Even if there's no violation, it doesn't mean anything. What happens is, if a trip is uneventful, but the observer still puts their notations into the computer, and all observers have access to this. So, for instance, on my own vessel, they read the comments about the boat, you know, boat from hell, or pleasure to be on. They have these personal notations in the computer system, so each observer, before they're being placed, can actually look at a vessel and see the history. What is the personality of the captain? And Twi is known as one of the nicest captains in the industry. And if there is insufficient food or anything else that resembles something that is not decent, trust me, the observer will log it in the final report, and NOAA is aware of it. And, you know, I mean, Ken just mentioned a couple of days off. No, it's actually more than 14 days to go from Honolulu to the California coast. This is not a cruise ship. I mean, they're not that fast. And also when it comes to 16 to 20 hours a day, well, duh. Doesn't anybody watch Deadliest Catch? I mean, these guys are working 24-hour days, take a sleep for an hour, and then they're back to another 23-hour day. I mean, that's the nature of fishing, because the nature of fishing is not clocking in from 8 to 5. It is a game of chance. It's like gold, digging for gold, Gold Rush, the show. They're working nonstop as much as they can till they drop dead in their bulldozers.
Or get washed over.
Or get washed over. Yeah, that's the same thing. For instance, the crew member was cited that there was a big wave. Well, if you're fishing on a boat and you haven't encountered a big wave washing the crew all over the deck, you're not fishing. That's just the reality of it. And they know they're getting into this business because they sign up for this, because they have a manning agreement. They have a contract before they even leave Indonesia or the Philippines. And when they come here and they're being checked in by customs, because nobody gets here without being checked in by customs, if they don't have a contract, guess what? They're back on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
Customs is on this. Customs knows this. Our government is working good. I mean, there's nothing that's happening. I see even the custom agents in slippers and shorts and tank tops on weekends walking around to make sure that everything is okay and that they're out of uniform. And if anybody has a complaint, they can just say so.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, everybody, all the foreign crew has customs on speed dial.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one boat, the crew, it was Indonesian crew, called customs and claimed that the food was insufficient. Customs was down on the boat within 10 minutes, inspected the refrigerator, looked at all the provisions, and that boat lost its privilege to have foreign crew. It's a privilege, because it's up to the port director to grant each boat the privilege to have foreign crew. Now, I noticed that the article calls, or everybody seems calling it, a loophole. Well, this is what the left does, okay? If it's a law they don't like, they call it a loophole. It's not a loophole, it's the law.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm still stumbling through this whole process, because I have a deep history in this. There are some skippers that are reckless, but there are also some that are good, are owners. I recall...
I would say the majority.
The majority of them, I hadn't spoken with the majority, but what I'm saying is that there have been instances where the AP person should have been more observant and more detailed. I'll give you an example. This was years back. I was approached by some of the fishermen, the deckhands, imported, and they told me there was a story one of their own was murdered by one of the captains. So that's, oh my goodness, that's bad news. You know, like any other environmentalist and any other liberal-minded person that want to do away with wrongdoing and justice and injustice, you know. So I set out to investigate this. I did establish that, yes, in Kiwalo Basin there was an altercation aboard the vessel, longline fishing vessel, and I went to the coroner's office and got the autopsy. And it showed that, yes, an individual did die. Now, this person that's telling me all of this and pushing and providing me the information sounded as accurate as you could be, and that no one had compensated the family, no one had done anything to the for the family. Come to find out, HPD had actually investigated the incident and determined Ted Kuntz was the detective, and he determined that it was not a murder. And then also I learned that the family was compensated. But if you hear the story along the dockside, my goodness, I spent months trailing looking for information on that, and then to come to find out, none of it was true, other than the fact that, yes, an incident did occur. They were trying to restrain him, and because his intoxication level, and it was something to do with compression of the chest. That was it. But again, I hope that AP would revisit this, because it's not going to address, even if there was slavery, this article does not hit at the real critical points, because it lets the legislators off the hook, it lets this Congress off the hook, it lets customs off hook, all people that have regulatory authority and oversight. It's just a casual mentioning.
Yeah, but you see, Carol, they are all on the hook, and they're all informed.
Yeah.
This AP article is nothing but a distortion of facts. For instance, they said that an observer claimed that they were floating prisons. I got an email from the observer basically recanting this. What was said was that the Hawaii longline boats are out for 14 to 20 some days, and then they come in, and then the crew gets to relax for at least 3 to 4 days. So that they like this. What the observer said, the crew loves being in Hawaii because they have relatives here. It is a good climate. And he said, unlike some of the Chinese, Taiwanese longliners, those were his exact words, that are out to sea for 5 years like floating prisons. Mm-hmm. So he's referring to the Chinese, Taiwanese, the imported fish as a floating prison to offset how good and how much the foreign crew likes being in Hawaii. The article takes Hawaii, floating prisons.
Mm-hmm.
The same way this one fish buyer here is mentioned as saying that all the owners are leeches. The way I heard it from the fish buyer is, yeah, he gave him a 20-minute interview. The word leech came up, the word owner came up, and that's it. And then they just pick and choose at the opposite end and put it together, because this is an agenda-driven article. Customs knows everything. DLNR knows about the foreign crew. The state knows about it. The senators all know about it. But this is the typical scenario. Confront someone with an allegation of slavery, racism, or whatever, mm-hmm. and immediately they run for the closet to hide.
And then things stay the way they are.
And they stay the way they are.
Nothing improves. And then if this was the intention to make things better, I suspect, from what I know about this state and the politics and the political and the government structure, didn't this article miss its target? Because if there are unjust practices or unfair treatment or inhumane treatment of other human beings, this article just, those people, for example, I'm saying, if it's slavery as they describe it, how does the author accept the statements from the legislators that they are promising to improve conditions? So you being owner, fishermen and all. How can they improve it, the legislators improve it?
What? Unless you're going to give me the Queen Mary and turn it into a longline boat, it's not going to work. It's just the delusional thinking.
Uh-huh.
I mean, a vessel is what it is. The environment is what it is. Take a look at Deadliest Catch. Are you going to legislate improving that now? Are you going to tell the waves to be smaller? I mean, this is just ridiculous.
And
pandering to some author who is agenda-driven. By the way, this coincides with her releasing her book about this scenario in foreign Asian markets.
Mm-hmm. And the IUCN being here at the same time, and the United States president, and right in the same time frame as having a expansion of the sanctuaries. But all of these do-good people that, though they're slavery, they won't tell Brian Schatz, look, dude, you have failed the public. You have failed the public. Whole Foods is saying, well, we're going to stop buying it. Well, then stop donating money if you are donating money to legislators. Where do you start and where do you stop if you're going to help fix this, or those people that buy and sell the fish, right?
Well, this knee-jerk reaction, I'm going to stop buying. All you do is, if you stop buying from us, the most sustainable fishery in the world, the most regulated fishery in the world, all you do is you're sourcing it now from foreign markets where these things actually occur. Do you think that an Indonesian would be over here if he could rather work in his own fishery and, as the article says, make as little as $20 a month?
Well, I mentioned the word HACCP.
Okay.
The industry here, the U.S. industry, observe HACCP.
Correct.
We also have circle hooks and what have you, and to protect turtles in certain methods and what have you, we prohibit. Other places that they're going to buy this food from and sell it because they don't want to buy from the slave industry, then we will see a greater impact on other species, non-targeted species, incidental take species. And
well, there's no such thing as incidental take species when it comes to the foreign markets.
Right.
A turtle over there is a delicacy. Thank God we got one. That's their attitude.
Yeah.
Over here, we avoid them like the pest.
Yes, because you get shut down.
Correct.
So, Ken, real quick, we got a couple more minutes, and you can call in the next hour if you'd like to. But go ahead if you have any more comments.
Sure. Actually, I did want to mention a couple of things. Number one, in terms of the working conditions on the boats, these boats are not allowed to have all foreign nationals. So the crew is mixed. There's U.S. nationals as well. Well, my father-in-law's boat, one of those foreign nationals is my stepson, who's 19 years old, and he's gone out there, and he's been doing this for a year, and you know he considers it to be a blast. Yes, there are hard days of work, and yes, there are known dangers associated with it that the appropriate precautions are taken to minimize those dangers as much as possible. But within that, he enjoys doing it, and then he also enjoys the breaks. He enjoys the time that he has when he's in Hawaii and when he's in San Francisco. And the other thing that he told me is that he's able to save money at a young age because when he's out at sea, he's not spending a dime. And so for 4 or 5 weeks at a time, he doesn't have any expenses at all. He's got his meals are paid for. There's nothing, there's nowhere to go to spend any money. And so he's able to save money, which is the same thing with the foreign nationals. Where they really come out ahead is they're making 10 times what they would make, more than 10 times probably what they could make at home, working. And they have almost no expenses because they're taken care of on the boat. The other thing I wanted to mention is that my father-in-law, and Mike had mentioned that he's a great guy, and he really is. When he was in his 20s, he took a fishing boat from Vietnam with all of his family because they literally were starving to death. And he took as many other people as he could take with him. He had 70 people on this fishing boat. They were the boat people, and he was the captain of the boat. as a 20-something-year-old with a bunch of little kids of his own in tow, and he brought everybody safely to a refugee camp in Malaysia and eventually helped them all get properly situated, many of them in the United States, where they became United States citizens, became productive citizens of the United States, and came in themselves as immigrants,
mm-hmm.
And was appreciative of the people who gave him opportunities to work and to work in hard jobs as he had to do it. And I'm sure that he's always viewed what he's been doing as giving people in other parts of the world an opportunity to help themselves out, not to be, putting people into slavery.
Yeah.
Or human trafficking. It's just
right.
It's just tragic for him to be labeled that way.
Okay. Well, Ken, we're going to close this hour and come back after a break. If you'd like to call back or hold on, you're more than welcome to. This is the Carol Cox Show. I'm sitting here talking about the subject of slavery aboard the Hawaii Long Line fishing vessels, as referred to by the Associated Press. And we'll be back, and 524-1080 is the number if you have any comments or calls, but we'll be back. Aloha.
For the second half of the Carol Cox Show, right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K101. We'll be right back. It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Good morning again, and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. A lovely day here in Hawaii. We are sitting and talking about the longline fishing industry based here in Hawaii. And recently there was a big article about slaves, and the actual name of it in the Star Bulletin was Floating Prisons. And we're not attempting to debunk or anything, but there are many issues that I, as a person who's been watching this, and in 2000, actually, if you go to Carol Cox or EnviroWatch, you can actually see where we've been involved in this for some while. And I believe then that it was something that, an industry that, if we were to tolerate the foreign workers, then it should be done right. And just to give you an example of why, you may have, if you were listening in the first hour, I'm being a little critical or tugging at the coattail of the legislators. I want to hold them accountable, but I want you to understand, and I want to demonstrate to you that they already knew this. And anything such as this, any behavior where someone can write an article and then you become demonized when our legislators have been at the helm and know about it, but forget if they knew about it. It's one of the largest industries in the state contributing to the economy. And you don't know how its manpower is fueled as a legislator. You don't know that. So it's inexcusable. I'm seizing this opportunity while saying I have my doubts about the way the description or how it was quantified or characterized as a slavery or floating prisons. I want to seize the opportunity to say, look, Hawaii, we have an army of legislators, and they allow this to develop. If it's that critical that we use foreign workers, then do it right. I had advocated, for example, there was a building that was built with state funds on Pier 38, and for some while I had approached legislators and asking various people in government, why don't you, if we have the workers here and they're not allowed, you know they're here, and you're basically sanctioning it, and you understand we benefit financially from their presence, why don't you build a dormitory where when they arrive in town from these long trips or fishing, they have some recreation area for pool, shower. That building laid vacant, and now it's been incorporated into some other business. So I don't want to sound bothered by the legislators, and I don't want to be irrational, but I also want to hold them accountable, and enough is enough. The editor, the author of this article, I did interview with her. Not that I want you to understand, I'm not complaining that she didn't quote me, but I offered many things that would have suggested maybe it's not what it appeared to be now with all of the knowledge and involvement with Customs, Coast Guard, the state legislators, our federal legislators, Hirano, Schatz, Hanabusa, and Gabbard. So let's not let them off the hook, and let's look a little bit deeper than what we see here. And that's all I ask of you. It's not much. And basically, I'd ask you, you take an investment and you thought you were doing what's legal. Police come by and say, yes, it's legal, and everything's fine, and you built your house, and the zoning committee came by and said, yes, it's legal, and all of that, and then someone comes along and describes it as offensive, then all of a sudden, all of that legal approval that you had disappears because now it's a temple of evil. So it's basically that it can happen to all of us. And so my interest is saying now there's a tension, and I believe it was erroneous in the description and inaccurate, but that's up to AP and the others to pursue that angle. So Mike, with me, so thanks, Mike.
Well, thank you, Carol, for the opportunity. I mean, the way I understand it is when you're saying they know this, yeah, they always knew how the industry works, mm-hmm. and it was legal, and it was perfectly okay. And then you have an article with mm-hmm. this political agenda, and then everybody kowtows, runs away, hides in a closet. We're going to check into it. We're going to close the loophole, which is a perfectly legal law, mm-hmm. and runs away because of this, the inflammatory context of the article. Mm-hmm. I mean, does that kind of paraphrase what you just
yes,
said?
Yes, yes. Okay. And I don't know a single customs agent that would turn his back and break the law by and ignore the law. So higher ups have obviously, this is tolerated. It's the practice and approved practice in the policies of ICE.
Well, it's not so much it's tolerated. It's perfectly legal. This is the law. It says you can go 55 miles an hour. So I'm going 55 miles an hour.
But people complain that you're going too fast, and then they run and hide.
Or I'm too loud while I'm going 55 miles an hour.
I mean, I'm sitting laughing, and I don't want anybody to think I'm belittling this. Party to say it's slavery and all these
and
other
then everybody runs away. Because everybody in this town, everybody in government knows exactly what's going on. They are informed. They know it is the law. And I love the way they always blame former Senator Inouye for something. It's like, let's dump it on him because he cannot defend himself.
But he was at the scene on many occasions, and I do know firsthand that people go, no, I can't do that. If I make a statement, the old man will get me. So, it's
well, that's your experience. But I'm just saying the way the article implies, it's as if it's something nebulous that the former senator was engaged in. But when it is the law, it is the law. You can go 55 miles. For instance, there was another boat owner that was quoted in one of the AP in a follow-up Associated Press article, and he made it clear that he uses local crew, and that sometimes they make as little as $50 a month, and sometimes as much as $2,000 a month. It is interesting to see that the follow-up article did not mention the $50. Because his crew gets paid after expenses. The foreign crew gets paid no matter what. So they always have their base pay.
Mm-hmm.
And then he mentioned in his follow-up article that he's contemplating to switch from local crew to Indonesian crew. And guess what? Mm-hmm. The Indonesian agents called my office. If they could have the phone number of the guy that was quoted in a newspaper article, because they want him to hire Indonesian crew. So they're cold calling.
Yeah, the truth. What is that term about half truths and half of the story? But here, Pier 17 doesn't even show up on most Honolulu maps. Cars whiz past. It passed it on their way to Waikiki. Passing tourists, let alone locals, are unaware that just behind a guarded gate, another world exists. Foreign fishermen confined to American boats for years at a time. Well, there is a gate there.
That's true.
And there is security there. But the fishermen can come and take their fishermen to go and pick up whatever, as long as they're legally abiding by the conditions of the prisons, right?
All they have to do is get on the list.
Yeah. So
whoever wants to visit, all they have to do is get on the list, so they're on the list to visit whoever's on the boat.
Right. So they say the industry is slave-minded, is a state of slavery. But you go to Pier 38, there are no lock gates. There are no security guards. So, in other words, let's pick brush stroke of this painting, and describe the entire painting.
Well, Pier 17 is close to Arla Park.
Yeah.
It's close to, let's call it what it is, close to a lot of crime homelessness,
drugs,
etc. So the reason there's a gate and there's a security guard is to make sure that everybody gets a good night's rest, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. But and also they use the security guards for other reasons, is that they impound boats that have been abandoned. There's, I think, two or three, and the Judy Kay was down there. So they don't want people walking in and plucking parts off of it from that period. So that's another reason they have security, not because to protect the prison, the slave colony.
Yeah, there was an incident with the Judy Kay. It turned out that somebody was running a gambling operation
on
that boat.
So there's many reasons. It's not the foreigners that are here. It's also the locals that would go in and abuse and strip off the electronics out of some of the ships and the boats. And so when I see this, I'm thinking, maybe, I said, well, maybe you didn't do your homework. But then I thought, no, I spoke to her, Mendoza, and I talked to her. And she didn't seem to be, what I was saying didn't contribute to the ilk or the line of thinking that
to
she
her agenda.
Right. So, and I, you know, so if you're wondering, I'm not trying to protect the industry. I'm just trying to lay out some truth here to say that the reality is people make an investment. The reality is there are government regulators regulating this process. And the people that all of a sudden someone throws the lights on and describe it as slavery, you're now out left like a deer in the headlights. As a fisherman, as a boat owner, or whatever, you're stuck. Now you got to fend for yourself, and you're at the mercy of whatever developed now, whatever new rules, or whatever. I understand there is a new rule or something, a contract or something.
They're working on a universal contract, but, you know... I don't know what to tell you, but every fisherman on a boat is supposed to have a contract. So we had contracts for years.
Mm-hmm.
So all this is just another reaction to allegations in a newspaper article that are just founded on nothing. There's no basis for it.
I would say I would say an inaccurate description, portrayal, characterization.
Because, like I said earlier, when the Coast Guard boards you, they ask for the contracts every time. They know their contracts. When the foreign crew member comes in, if he doesn't have a copy of the contract in his hand, he's on the next flight back.
Yeah.
Our government is doing its job. What it is everybody just runs for the hills when you have an article like this calling you names. Slaveholders.
But then the impact, though, the negative impact, who's going to be impacted?
Us.
You mean when you say us?
The fish. The industry, yes.
Yeah, the industry. And so, I mean, from what I know and observe down there, I've been, whether it was shark finning or killing birds and all of that, we've been quite aggressive in making sure that when... There's one quote about Kitty Simons. She is the head of Western Pacific Fisheries Council. And I submit that I'm a little different, and everybody got something to lose. I have nothing to lose and nothing to gain other than to be feel good about things getting better or people not being maligned like the industry. The industry has its problems, but... Don't just come out and say that it's a slave industry and then walk away and go, didn't we show them? And it's not going to do anything, because if our legislators have failed us in the past and allow it to get to this slave condition, right?
Yeah, but except there is none.
No, I'm saying, let's speak for what they're calling it. I mean, we know that. We've already established that. That's why I'm sitting here. Offering that. If anybody is so shallow they're not listening in depth, then I mean I have no help for them. It's real simple. But let's see here, Kitty Simons.
Here's the funny thing. We got the observers on the boat, and they take videos, they make reports, and NOAA, National Marine Fishery, actually uses the Hawaii fishery to promote sustainability, safe fishing, turtle mitigation, bird mitigation. They even send their people to South America to showcase how good the Hawaii fishery is. And then along comes one article, and, you know, I don't know if this is a coincidence or not, but they're closing the monument. They know the fishermen are going to be talking back. They don't like it. So let's go and accuse the boat owners, the industry, of being slaveholders.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's I don't know. I don't want to believe in conspiracy theories, but the timing is just, you know, some say it's just because she wants to promote her book, but go ahead. You've
well,
found the passage?
Here's my my concern, but and I'm in a precarious position here because so on one hand, I'm one to justice for and fairness for all parties, and I don't have a boat, and I don't buy fish, and I don't have a business connected to that. So I'm free to say what I believe to be true and what my observations are. You guys and everyone has something, they may offend someone, so allow me to point right. these things out. And then if they have a heartburn, then call me up. But the reality is that the people, what I'm trying to convey is that the people that should have been doing something and should be doing something to prevent inaccurate or false characterizations or inaccurate characterizations of an industry, when they know, they should have immediately said, no, we want to have a comment and a rebuttal to all of this, all of your claims and all of your observations, API. But instead, they were giving some innocuous comments, and I...
Because the order of the day is you don't attack the media. It's just that simple.
Well,
they're just not going to do it, Carol. That's just the politicians. They're not going to do it.
Well, but
you can feed them anything, and they're going to say we're going to look into it.
Yeah, but
and then you turn around and they tell their staff. I mean, it's the most idiotic thing I ever heard.
Yeah,
but the official line will be, we will be looking into it.
At the piers, the quote, at the piers, some vessels are tidy, neatly packed with coil ropes, scrubbed rails, and clean decks. Others have piles of garbage, rusting tanks, and rotting carpets. It's unhealthy, quite frankly, for people to have kept on the boat, said. It's unhealthy, quote, it's unhealthy, quite frankly, for people to have to be kept on the boat, said Kitty Simons, executive director of Honolulu. Now, see, you guys can't sit here and take issue with that, but I think that she should have been saying,
Let me see that. because there are abandoned vessels in the harbor.
Well, I mean, I'm not the attack dog for anybody, but what I'm saying is that there are more important things than she should have seized that opportunity and said, well, what may be in appearance unethical and, quote, slave conditions, this is a situation.
Okay, I see what you were referring to in the article. And
so all you can come
I really
away
don't
with
know personally Kitty Simons, but... For her to say what
she's the executive director of the Western Pacific Fisheries Council, which has great hands in what goes on in the fishing industry.
I understand that, but what
federally that is
right. Excuse me. Yes, she is. However, every single person in that article, I did not talk to her because I don't even know her.
Mm-hmm.
Said that they were misquoted to the point of dishonesty. Now, I know there are vessels in the harbor,
mm-hmm.
17 and 38, that are abandoned.
Right.
That means they don't even go fishing.
There was one,
Deborah Ann, the Leia.
Immediately, when I read that portion, I thought... Rusty tanks and all.
That's those folks.
If you don't know the details.
They never go fishing. I don't believe that Kitty Simons said this. Because I know it says it in the article.
Right.
But I believe she was misquoted like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Cut and paste to make a quote. Because, as you mentioned earlier, HACCP. You're not going to be selling any fish. Your fish will not be sold if it comes off a vessel like that.
Here's what I say to all of this. This is why I'm pointing this out. And maybe the fishermen might find some logic to my comments and say, we don't care how polite they are. The fact is, you have an industry now that is threatened and being maligned, and you have Whole Foods and others considering stop doing business with you. And I mean, we can be polite, but again, the consequences of having people in line that represent you, and she's clearly, the Simons is clearly someone that is of an importance, or she wouldn't have gone to her. So I'm saying, right. Here's what I'm suggesting.
She should correct her. She should correct her.
All parties, because the consequences are devastating.
Yes.
I mean, when you have such a thing in the IUCN here, and here you're a slave laborer on slave boats, and, okay, I'm going to stop buying their fish, and I'm going to do this, that's when everybody in the line that's concerned with this industry.
Yes, if she did not say that, then she should request to have a correction.
But I would have said, I don't want to talk about stinking carpets. I want to talk about how we can fix this. This has been accepted. It's been in practice. And we're going to, it's not slavery because all parties know about it. The fishermen are adhering to what they are. And now, if there's some wrongdoing on the part of each individual fisherman, then by golly, we'll address that too. We'll create a direct source, but the reality is she didn't say, oh, you say it's slavery? Oh, my goodness. We can't have slavery here. You know, basically, she complimented this effort by saying, look, your description and characterization is not accurate. And secondly, I ain't talking about stinking carpets, especially if this is all you want from me and quote from me. I want to see quotes about an industry that I'm responsible for. That's my take on this, and I think it would be, why am I so adamant? Because as our worst situation here in Hawaii is related to environmental concerns, birds, hooking turtles, we have some oversight with you guys, but if the movement shifts to foreign countries and fisheries, we'll see decimation of populations of fish faster, quicker, because we're going to have our appetite still here in America. Whole Food is going to need to supply the fish because it didn't say it was going out of business.
Yes.
It's going to look for other foreign sources. Do they have the same regulations of Magnuson, Stevenson, and all of those, and the hook and lines and bird detractors and what have you?
No, they don't. They just don't.
Yeah.
And this is why, you know, the U.S. goes out and tries to promote the Hawaii fishery. And we're being used as a showcase of a perfect fishery with a perfect score, and then you have some lady come in and trying to promote her book at the same time we have the convention and the monument is being closed.
You know, you stole my thunder here, because that was my next statement, to say the United States government, Western Pacific Fisheries Council, has people on staff to promote this industry.
Yeah.
And then in turn, when it's attacked with some article such as this, or the inaccurate portrayal that I believe, and all you get is talking about a stinking carpet, and then if it's not a comment, a quote from her, then she should be blazing. I mean, there's her desk should have burned down from writing.
Yeah, demanding a retraction.
Because of the implications are substantial enough that it's going to cause a ripple financially and a hardship to many of you.
Well, you just mentioned the Stephen Magnuson Act. You know, the Stephen Magnuson Act was passed so that foreign fishing vessels could not fish 3 miles off state waters.
Right.
I mean, or, you know, just be right outside.
Mm-hmm.
So that there would be an exclusive economic zone for American fishermen to fish.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the president managed to take that away with a stroke of a pen.
Now, let me ask you this, and I, if I'm inaccurate, but I thought I read in there, and please correct me if I'm, that these boats fishing in Hawaiian waters. Did the article mention Hawaiian waters?
I would have to look at it again, because nobody fishes in Hawaiian waters.
I don't want to misspeak, but I thought, and I made a note somewhere, So I thought, well, gee, Hawaiian waters. Well, first of all, you can't, a longline boat can't dare be caught within 3 miles of the shoreline in state waters.
Fishing make it more like 100.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but state law, the state authority
we
goes out
fish
to 3 miles.
Waters.
Right. So you can't be fishing in Hawaiian waters.
No, Never happens.
And you have a VPS, or what is it called?
VMS.
VMS that monitors your boat. When your boat leaves, well, they don't even have to leave. They know where it's parked.
Yes.
At all times, right?
Yes.
That VMS system leaves ashore, it tracks you, and if you go into a restricted zone, that satellite sends a signal saying...
A National Marine Fisheries Services knows immediately where you are.
Yeah, and they occasionally have observers aboard.
You don't need an observer to know that a fishing vessel is inside the fence.
Right.
You can tell that from the office.
So I got to go back and look at this article and see. I thought, it was me reading so fast, that I was just looking and thinking, if there is hardship, unreasonable hardship, and inhumane treatment against of people on these vessels, then address that. But don't run and call it slavery when you have everybody in the wild blue yonder authorizing it and condoning it, and it doesn't...
Well, the funny thing is, they only interviewed one crew member, the one that claims he didn't get paid, although we have the canceled checks that he was making between $2,000 to $3,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
But how come they didn't interview any of the crew members that are down there?
Mm-hmm.
And if you cannot get onto Pier 17, if you're not on the list, then go to Pier 36, 37, 38, and just interview those crew members. And you're going to find out that they are all happy.
Right.
And the other thing is, too, this is an insult to the people in Hawaii, to all the people in Hawaii who have relatives on the boats, mm-hmm. cousins, nephews. What? You're not going to go and do something about this? Are you really telling me that someone in Hawaii who has a nephew or a cousin on one of those boats that is being mistreated, that you're not going to speak up? No, I'm sorry. It's not so.
I, as I usually do, go down, and you know that I do, I go down and talk to the different fishermen, the imported ones, and I talk to them, and some of the stories you hear.
Imported? You mean the foreign crew?
They import. It's imported work, import labor,
okay.
You know, and... They're not slave labor. That's as long as I don't refer to them. But when you go down there and the stories you hear, you know, I'm going to convey this because this is why I take my stance. I've spoken with many of them, and you hear them talk about the stories that in their hometown, they already have land. The families don't have a house, but they have land, and they're living in the shanties. But they talk about the money that they make here. They send it back.
That's right.
And then their uncle, one guy was telling me how his uncle is getting the wood, buying and building actual physical structures, and then buying. He said he bought a tiller that they needed. And they're able to make money. Now, is that good that you guys or whoever is accused of paying them less than what you would pay? I don't know. I'm not getting in that point of it. But what I've heard these stories, and it's like, you know, it may not seem what it is, but apparently this guy finds a benefit to it. And if there's a fisherman treating them improperly, then Customs, Coast Guard, legislators should not just take it for granted. They know they're here. They know some people can behave wrong toward people, so make sure that there's some policing.
Well, there's always a bad apple in any situation. But when it comes to the crew overall, most of them are actually not just landowners. They own multiple residences.
Yeah.
I don't know about the Indonesians because I don't have Indonesian crew, but the Filipino crew, they own multiple residences. And they rent them out. They're actually considered to be rich. They all put their kids to college. For instance, on my, you know, when we have the typhoons, the biggest Honda generator you can put into a Balikdaban box
mm-hmm.
goes to the Philippines. So at one point we said, well, why are we always reacting to the typhoon in the Philippines? Why not being proactive? Let's just send the smallest or the biggest generator that fits into the Balikdaban box and send it out now. And so everyone is prepared for emergencies. And like I said, I know one boat that has a guy on it. He has been here for at least 20 years. He owns 10 houses, 10 homes. Mm-hmm. And he has no intentions of retiring yet, because his goal is to have 20 homes.
Yeah, I've talked to your head crew.
Yeah, and you talked to my deck boss.
Many of them, the Lady Jane, many of those boats.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, they know what I do, and they know that I'd beat a path down to the governor's office of custom if they had a problem.
They would. As a matter of fact, it is hard to be able to even send one of them home and say, it's your turn to go on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't want to leave. Yeah. Because they want to make the money, because they like the money. So what we ended up implementing is that they even get paid while they're on vacation, while they're gone for 3-4 months.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise you cannot get the crew to rotate.
Here's something that caught my eye, too, in this article. Quote, thus about 700 foreign workers in Hawaii lack rights most Americans take for granted. They have little legal recourse and are detained on boats where U.S. Customs and Border Protection require captains to hold men's passports. I don't hear anything that's consistent with the harshness as they try to characterize the industry. You think this is the proof? You think that Customs is implicated in it as wrongdoing or creating and encouraging slavery? Because if they, with this statement...
Absolutely not. Little recourse is just another misquote or misstatement of facts. Mm-hmm. Their whole article is nothing but propaganda. Because, as I said before, there are signs on the pier, and every crew member, I'm not aware of any crew member that does not have a cell phone. I'm sorry, they all have cell phones.
Right.
And they have Customs on speed dial.
Right.
All they have to do is... All they got to do is call Customs. Customs will be down there within 10 minutes.
Yes.
Customs is not pro-owner, pro-company. They're pro-crew. They're there for the crew. They care more about the crew than anything else. You know, like you just said in the article, that they supposedly hold the passports hostage. It is not so. They want all the passports in one spot, because Customs comes by at all hours of the day. When they show up at 2 a.m. Right. to spot check on the boats, they want to make sure that the passports are all in one spot and crew members don't misplace them. Because the worst scenario is you have a crew member without. So the crew has access to the passports, goes to the cabinet where they're stored or pulls the drawer out, and they all have it. It's the same on oil tankers, cruise ships. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what industry, because Filipino crew, foreign crew, is all over the maritime industry. And what they do is they keep them in one spot so Customs doesn't have to go from bunk to bunk to bunk and check on the crew where their passport is.
So, Cheney, thus about 700 workers in Hawaii lack rights most Americans take for granted. Well, that statement caught my eye. Here's why. Americans are afforded rights under the Constitution. Foreigners are not, unless they're native or immigrants, legally immigrated and become citizens.
No.
The Constitution doesn't, freedom of, under the civil rights, not the civil rights, the amendments. A foreigner doesn't have all the rights that we have.
Actually, I hate to correct you on this. If you're inside the country, you got all the rights.
They're not inside,
right,
remember.
That's correct. Okay. So these guys here are on the outside. They're detained on board, so they're not inside.
This is
the two Indonesians that ran away in California. They knew the trick. They run away. They're inside.
Right, but that's a different. That's the
right.
About
and now
the
they candle. Got all the protection.
They're talking about the candles on the cake. I'm talking about getting back to basics
over here.
And with this article, see, the article just so liberally plasters it out, and
right.
And you know, they're not afforded because they're not really legally in the country.
That's correct. And the only thing we're waiting for now with this article is have 700 people step on the other side of the street and say, I demand.
But I'm not to be argumentative, but I'm just sharing with you. I know when my hackles go up about it, I'm about justice.
Right.
And civil rights and all of that, equal rights. But when you go at it this way, I believe it hampers and hinder. If there is a problem, it ain't going to get fixed.
Well, no, what the legislature should do is, you know, here's the funny thing. You got a foreign boat, fishing boat, for instance, a fishing boat or a tanker, coming into town, right? And we have them here at,
right.
at the pier.
Pier 1 and all in
yeah.
that area.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Every one of those crew is granted a visa. Mm-hmm. So they can all walk around. They can go to Walmart. They can do whatever they want.
And they can meet the girls that come there in the taxi cab and wait for them. They're always right there
right.
by
Barra. Okay. Our crew used to be able to do this because they were granted a C-1, D-1 visa.
Mm-hmm.
In the old days, I could take them to the other side of the island. I could take them to a beach party to just get away and do something, see something. You could even take them to the other island, right? You could do what... You know, what's just nice. 9/11 is what destroyed all of this. I'm not too sure. I don't think there was any legislature
mm-hmm.
to take that right away to the C-1, D-1. I think it was just another knee-jerk reaction from somewhere up in the administration.
Mm-hmm.
Because I am aware of Jakarta, the embassy, no C-1, D-1 visas. Manila, no C-1,
mm-hmm.
D-1 visas. There was a boat that had crew from the Solomon Islands, and I guess they never got the memo. From the State Department, no visas, because he had crew on a visa here. And when the authorities became aware of it, they immediately tried to deport him, and it went to a deportation judge, and the judge goes, no, it's not so.
Mm-hmm.
They have a valid visa. I don't care if they never got the memo in Solomon Islands. These guys have a visa. If they are here on the visa, they're free to do on their off time what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So... If there was any concern, maybe they should just go back, because the vetting process is there. The foreign crew that returns, because why do they return year after year after year? I mean, I know of crew that has been here 20 years. They all have been assigned a number by Homeland Security, their own ID number.
Mm-hmm.
And so they know about these, they have vetted them, etc. When a new one comes in, that hasn't been here before, they vet them too. So why not just allow them to be vetted, get the information beforehand, have them vetted, and then tell the embassy, issue them the visa so they can just fly in and fly out for the vacation instead of going through this, as they say, long journey.
And I understand that Customs use some of these, if not all of them, from various ports of countries, to when in the vetting process, hey, look, this guy is, you know anything about him? What's his background? Have you heard of this guy?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you know, a mean of screening people and vetting people in the process. I have no problem with that. But my point is that if you're going to be characterized as a slave operation, then I believe it, all those that want to hide behind mama's skirt tail and think that the public is going to get it.
It's just like calling the white guy a racist. He immediately runs away. I mean, this is
I mean, what you call me, man? What?
Yeah, what? I mean, Carol, you use the words that are strong enough, and everybody will run and just cater to the scenario. Oh, not me, not me, not me. It was never there in the first place.
I'm looking, you know, the sex trade, the slave trade, the human trafficking. I'm looking to see those things quashed in life. But don't run down to the docks and then say, well, look at that. That's slavery. And then you have all of these processes and people involved, the government, that you're going to go and ask to take care of the trafficking and prosecute the trafficker. And yet you...
Yeah, but you see, Carol, this is an agenda-driven article. It's nothing but propaganda to promote her book or whatever her agenda is. She interviewed you,
yeah,
and you told her the opposite, and she didn't do anything about it. I know that she interviewed Customs. I know she went to our authorities and asked them, and I know that they told her it's not so. They knew and told her that crewman was being paid.
Mm-hmm.
And how much money he was making.
Yeah.
Because they knew, but she chose to disregard the truth and distort the facts to the point of dishonesty. The Observer that was quoted as saying slave ships was referring to Taiwanese and Chinese longliners that were at sea for 5 years, and he was saying how good the Hawaii Longline fleet is compared to that.
Mm-hmm.
And she just chose only to print certain things. Well, you cannot. I mean, when people want to be this dishonest, how do you fight that?
Right.
I asked them. They said, we have an 800 number you can call to make any corrections. Oh, really? Oh, really? I'm going to be now waiting on your 800 number for 25 minutes on hold to make a correction that I never see?
And then where are the corrections going to be published?
I think it's always the last page where on the deceased.
Yeah. But anyway, I want people to understand, my listeners to understand, I'm not fending for the industry. What I'm trying to say is consistent with many of the subjects we talk about here is that failed government practices causes harm to many of us. It submit and subjects us because we try to be law-abiding. We do what the law allows.
Yeah.
And then when you get someone to come by and say, I'm annoyed with that, it's not right, it's just, it's wrong, and then all of a sudden you're left to your own accord. No man is an island, you're a sinking rock. Now, you understand?
Yeah, no, I know, I wholeheartedly understand. No, I know you're not an advocate for the industry. No. What you do is you allow someone like me to voice his opinion without cut and paste. There's no delay. I just get, you allow me to represent my side of the story.
This is about
a shot at honest media versus dishonest media.
And this is about American values. They talk about it in this article. When you characterize an entire industry like that, and there are some broken pieces about the industry, but when you got this number, and I keep repeating it, when you have this number of government entities involved on the daily basis, almost to the minute, and then all of a sudden you characterize the whole United States government. See, they were able to fragment and say it's the fishing industry, but the implication and the indictment is of the whole United States government and the state government. And Congress.
That's the implication, yes.
That's substantial. And I'm just cruising going, wow, you get such allegations and such attack on your character and integrity, and you don't have a blistering article, a rebuttal, or nothing?
You think the government would fight back. But,
or set the record straight.
Or set the record straight, but no. It's just like those legislatures or the editorials in the newspaper, let's close the loophole. Let's just jump on the bandwagon because the words sounded good.
Yeah, and boy, we're all bad. And again, to say, and I know many of them listening out here are going to say, well, gee, I can't believe you were defending. Well, if you got me confused with an act of defending an industry, you're wrong. What I'm advocating for is that none of us as American citizens should be allowed to do something and encouraged to do it and then given a set of rules to do it. And then all of a sudden when someone complains, we're left to our own accord. And that's like being stripped naked. Where do you go from here?
When you look at the articles from a businessman's perspective, too, I mean, I know you're looking at it from, from the government perspective. Why aren't they defending it? But I noticed the one article that said they only had torn and worn out gear.
Fishing gear?
Yeah, fishing gear.
Oh, boy, that guy makes a lot of money with torn and worn out gear, huh?
Well, here's the thing. If you have your crew in torn and worn out gear, I guarantee you one thing. They're going to get sick. They're going to get cold. They're going to get wet. They're going to get cold. And they're going to catch the flu. So why would I be sabotaging my own operation by providing them not with top gear so that they're nice and warm and dry? If you got six guys in a bunk because they got the flu, you're out of business. So it's like saying I operate a trucking company, trucking stuff from A to B, but I will not provide oil for the engines. It's that ridiculous.
Will you, you guys are in this process now in response, will you give them more money? Are you contemplating that? Or will, is that going to satisfy the people that characterize this as a slave industry? What are some of the thoughts right now? And there's a caller. Hold that thought.
Okay.
Caller, thank you for calling. Real quick, go ahead with your comment.
Good morning, Mr. Carol Cox.
Good morning.
How come in Alaska, fishermen in for 1 week make $5,000 a week? This was about 30 years, 40 years ago. They make $5,000 a week, and I realize it's very dangerous because the waters are so rough and you can be lost. How come in here? I mean, the owners of the boats, they have no conscience.
Well, here he is. Let him answer your question. We don't have a lot of time. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, simple, because they make $500,000 in that 1 week. That's what their gross is. We don't operate on those numbers because we're dealing with imported fish from those places where they do have bad conditions. If we're making $500,000 a week, yes, then the fishermen would be making that much. And the crew, our crew has worked on foreign fishing vessels in the past, and they all prefer to be over here. So if, you know, we can't, there's not enough money in the fishery to pay that kind of money. The owners don't even make that money. I know the article says when a tuna can go for $1,000. Well, yeah, that's one tuna. But not all tuna go for $1,000. Take a look at the 10 cents a pound fish. So, you know, it's not realistic. If I was in a fishery where I make $500,000 a week, yes, the crew would be making $5,000 a week. But we're not in that kind of a fishery, so the crew makes about $2,000 a month.
Okay, he's gone. But this is something that has to be addressed on the. If I were the fisherman, I would form some kind of response back if I was that industry. And I would ask, I'd beg of all parties, the regulators, the monitors, the managers, and say, look, we can't be caught off guard again with this kind of portrayal.
Yes.
And it has its consequences nationally and internationally.
Well,
financially.
Talking about international, I find it amazing that when somebody says over here, I'm contemplating to get Indonesian crew, you have all the Indonesian crew agents calling over here, hey, what crew for you?
Right.
Now, the other thing is, our foreign crew, excuse me, I've got one of those Hillary moments here, works on foreign vessels who compete directly with us. If we don't deliver fish to the market, then it will be foreign vessels with our foreign crew who will pay then the crew a tenth of what we pay. So, you know, who do you want to supply the markets? Uncontrolled, unregulated, unsupervised foreign vessels?
Mm-hmm.
Or you want to have Hawaii vessels that are regulated, controlled, and supervised to the max?
Right. Well, one thing I would say before I close here, if Ms. Mendoza or someone is interested in coming on and rebutting or speaking to these comments that we've made, please don't hesitate to give me a call, carolcox.com, or send me an email, or you can 808-782-6627, which you already have that number. You've contacted me on it. But I believe that there's a lot more to be said about this, and I'm glad that I'm not a fisherman, because I would be somewhere in a closet now drinking my soul to hell, because you cannot be. It's there. The fish also, there are some of the fish, some really choice fish at the auction is put into a cold room and sold in different places, and you guys don't benefit from that to the greatest degree.
You know, even the minister that was quoted in that article, or the doctor, I should say, he said that he was misquoted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, come down to the pier, talk to the crew.
Right.
I mean, it's that simple. It just is not so. And for having this smear campaign against an entire industry and calling us the worst.
Well, you are who you associate with, so you guys, the Coast Guard, should be. If it stands that these allegations, the portrayal that you guys are a slave industry, then Coast Guard got to do a lot of work to cleanse its image, and then Customs got to do a lot of work, and then our legislators. But you see, it's not a slave industry. It is something, a practice that has evolved, and we need someone to address those issues and prevent this kind of flare-up again, because
I'm not too sure how that actually feeds into it, but it's just like what we have on the news right now. You're calling every police officer a murderer. I mean, it's just, what are you going to have? Have them all stand up, united?
Different. This is about,
I really don't expect Customs to come out. I really don't expect the Coast Guard to do anything.
But I mean,
I don't expect anything from government to happen.
Yeah, but they're the ones standing by and letting you get screwed to the ground.
Slander to the ground.
I think that it's probably going to get worse. Here's my observation. It's probably going to get worse because most fishermen are in a defensive mode as well as an apologetic mode, and then protecting the industry, the people that regulate you, there's no real speaking to those issues unless they are addressed, put on the table. You'll find yourself down the road later struggling with the same kind of allegations and mischaracterizations.
I know you like to hold the government's feet to the fire, but do you really expect them to do anything?
I marvel at you. You go to Vegas every time your boat leaves the shore.
True. I'm not going literally to Vegas, but I'm gambling my life away. Yes.
You got to, just to get that sucker to roll in the waves, you got to put fuel in it.
Yes.
And then you got to have an insurance policy. And then you got to make sure the holes are not rusted through. And then you got to make sure you got ice. And when all of that is said and done, you got the best.
You still hope to break even.
You got the best catch you've ever had in your life. And if you make a mistake and it sloshes too much, or the freezer don't work, or the ice don't work,
yes,
you lose your ship.
I lose the whole trip. And here's the best part: if it was local crew, American crew, they get nothing.
Yeah.
It's just like John said in the article, right, because they work off a percentage. They get nothing because there was a loss.
Right.
It's like once guy said, local crew gets as little as $50 a month. Right. The foreign crew, on the other hand, gets their money no matter what.
Contract. Yeah.
That's right. Plus, they get their bonuses.
Well, please come back again.
You're going to go mainland for the next 2 weeks?
Yes.
Good.
Call in and update us. So thank you, Mike, for joining me. This is the Carol Cox Show, and I appreciate you guys listening in. We'll be back next week. Jan Weinberg and John Carroll will be in sitting in for me next week and the week after that, so please enjoy and feel free to call up. Those are two sharp guys. All righty. Well, thank you, and we'll be back next week.